Some poetry is very obviously Christian. Frank Horn is a black writer. In fact, those of you who were here a couple days ago when I did that one about To James, the runner, do you remember how you flung yourself out of the blocks and ran down the stretch and all that? Frank Horn has another poem. He has lots of poems. He has another one that illustrates what I mean by some poetry is very directly Christian. And this one is, the wise guys tell us Christmas is kid stuff. Maybe they got something there. 2,000 years ago, three wise guys chased a star across the continent to bring frankincense and myrrh, born to a kid with an idea in his head. And as the bombs crash all over the world today, the real wise guys know that we've all got to go chasing stars again in the hopes that we can bring back some of that kid stuff born 2,000 years ago. Langston Hughes, not so obviously Christian, but you can see Christianity in it, obviously. It's very short, don't miss it. In an envelope marked personal, God addressed me a letter. In an envelope marked personal, I have given my answer. And you see personal relationships. You see something that's a little bit trying to ignore maybe institutionalized religion and so on. And then, of course, we all know about the poetry of the spirituals. I mean, that is, the lyrics for spirituals is poetry, I think, right? I mean, it's full of metaphor, it's full of concrete image, and it's full of wonderful kinds of stories. Some of the modern black poetry is not so obvious. And when I said we're going to have fun today and I have a little snicker, we're going to look at a poem that has some pretty rough language. And in fact, it's rough enough to be offensive. And I understand that. And it's not a poem that I walk around reading everywhere in my life. But it's a poem that I think has some merit to see this idea. How secular literature, what is so clearly in that secular world, is so obviously secular, I'm going to suggest to you, is also so obviously true to the gospel. And to get that set up, I'd like to have you throw out some ideas that I'll record for you on the board. Let's share together some of the most famous, or the things that you can remember, things that are attributed to Jesus Christ, things that he has said. Okay, and I'll write them down, if I can find some chalk.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah. Good.
Love as I have loved you.
Good.
Let the little children come into me.
What we're doing here is just kind of recording some of the famous statements attributed to Jesus. Forgive them, for they know not. And I'll just do it that way.
Pray for those who persecute you.
Yeah. Those two came at the same time. Be not afraid, Lord, I'm with you always. And they, isn't that wonderful? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Same phrase, right?
I mean, when you find something special in a class, you got to jump on it right now. Don't let it go, right? Okay. Good. Keep going.
Heal yourself.
Wow.
Whom do you say I am?
I'm looking for more.
Why have you been
here? I cheated. I went and kind of looked through the Bible before I came.
My peace I give, not as the world.
I'm just going to write, and you'll see why. Not as the world. My piece I give. I'll put the ellipsis in front.
I am the vine, you are the branches.
And I'll put ellipsis on that. You know, it's good, it's famous, good.
I am within you. The kingdom is within you.
Kingdom is within. Anything else about a kingdom? Does he say anything?
I looked it up, so I remember.
It is near.
Okay.
Let your light so shine before others.
Good. Let's see if I can fit these in. Any. Okay.
You are the light and the salt.
What does he say about mom and dad? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, blessed are those who hunger
and thirst. Yeah. Matter of fact, let's put all, what are they called?
Beatitudes.
B-A-U, no way.
Beatitudes.
The first will be last.
By the way, just in case you might not have been here the very first session, you can't give me any more than a one or two syllable word to put on a board. Just is beyond my intellect. Or else my... Not my intellect, but my experience with freshman English, perhaps.
The first will be last, and the last will be first.
Yeah. First shall be last. You've probably seen it. Robert has one, the registrar. He who dies with the most toy wins. First will be last. What?
Feed my sheep.
Feed my sheep. What does he say about... mother and father. I'm going to get into some, and again, I looked this stuff up, just who expects you to remember all this, but.
Who is my mother, my brother, and sister?
Yeah, and what does he say about that?
Who does the will of God?
Yeah, so he's got a definition of my brother, and I'll use ellipsis.
How about I bring that piece with a sword?
Yeah, that's a crazy one. I'll just write that too. The sword quote. I bring not peace but a sword.
Love father and mother more than me. You're not worthy of me.
That's a tough one, isn't it? Love your father more, or your mother more than me. You're not worthy of me. There's an interesting book. It's called. Ye Shall Be as Gods. It's by Eric Fromm, the guy who wrote The Art of Loving, a more famous book than Ye Shall Be as Gods is. And he interprets the whole Old Testament as a journey toward becoming gods, and gods in a good sense of the word, as in all the stories, the main characters, I mean, he steps back from the Old Testament and doesn't take story by story, but kind of looks at the progression of lots of the stories fit together. And says the journey is towards these people becoming free of the things that have been their gods, and he calls them incestual relationships. But we have incestual relationships with the land because it means more to us than God. And if you want to find God, you got to give that up. So Abraham, sorry, you got to go. You got to give up the relationship with your mom and dad and leave everybody, and you got to go. And sorry, slaves, you got to get up and leave. You know, and wander in the wilderness and surrender a lot of stuff. And Jesus is not so far from that either, is he? And I'm not so sure that, you know, in my own understanding of one word that is thrown out in literary criticism way too often is that word existential. You know, what the flip does that mean? But my understanding of existential identity has something to do with the book of Job. Strip of everything. And then see who you are. And then, and after he's stripped of everything, what? He can come to God. And it seems as though Jesus sometimes says that too. You know, get rid of, you know, leave your job, follow me. Love me, and I don't know. Okay, those kinds of things. My point in bringing that up, and I'm glad you said that one, is to suggest, look at all this stuff. Wow, he's radical. Isn't he? I mean, he was so radical that, of course, he can't be tolerated. I mean, he's so against the system. Well, that concept, and I wrote down some more. I guess you got them all. The Sabbath was made not for people. I mean, the Sabbath was made for people, right? And that's a radical thought in the religious institutional concepts of the day. the woman that gets caught in adultery, right? What the law says, and it's been spelled out in about six different places, probably more for you Bible scholars. Stone her. Jesus says, no way. You know what he says? It's famous. Which one of you isn't going to go get a sheep or pull your mule out of the mud on a Sabbath day and all those kind of radical things?
Pray for your enemies. So.
Yeah, pray for your enemies. Love your enemies. Here we have it too. Pray for those who persecute you. That's radical stuff. With that kind of introduction, I'd like to look at some, you know, really quite radical poetry. And I'm going to start with what, and in a way I'm going to apologize because the language will be offensive. In another way I'm not going to apologize because this is the movement, this is one representative, of the movement of black art in the 1960s. And the very first one to look at is on the one where it says, if we must die, okay? And we'll look at if we must die. That's not the rough language one. But that's the new sheet, and if I'm not, anybody got one side by side? Here's three people right here who don't have any, but can look on. And anybody else? Two. I Xerox 50 of these before I came to Holden. I never dreamed that we'd run out of books. This poem, probably lots of people have heard, but very few people know it was written by a black man. And it was made famous by Winston Churchill in World War II. I mean, he got up and said this. And you can hear him. If we must die, let it not be like hogs. Well, I mean, we're going to fight back here. Hunted and penned in an inglorious spot, while round us barked the mad and hungry dogs. Who are they? It's the Ku Klux Klan. It's the slave owners. It's anyone who, I mean, those of you who have been in different sessions with slave narratives and black poetry, we've seen anyone who oppresses, of course, making their mock at our accursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain. Then even the monsters we defy shall be constrained to honor us, though dead. O kinsmen, we must meet the common foe. Though far outnumbered, let us show us brave, and for their thousand blows deal one death blow. What though before us lies the open grave? Like men, we'll face the murderous, cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying, but fighting back. I'm not going to argue that that's particularly true to the gospel kind of poem. You may be able to do that. I'm going to suggest this is written in the 1940s. It's the beginning of protest and of anger and of a kind of freedom to be able, I can write what I think, and I can write about the truth of oppression and maybe still get published, and Claude McKay does. And this begins a movement that takes, then comes Richard Wright in Native Son, and if you've read it, he's angry, and if you haven't read it, read it, and you'll find out he's angry. Black Boy, angry. Uncle Tom's Children, angry voices. And then James Baldwin comes. I think it's an angry voice. It's an articulate, intellectual voice, but it's also angry, of course. Well, this sets up, and it builds and builds and builds, and then you know what happens in the 60s, right? What happens in Newark, Chicago, Detroit, Watts, you know, the riots? What happens in Birmingham, Montgomery, Selma? I mean, you know what's happened. And then if you want to go back to see what kind of precipitated that, you go back to Brownsville, Texas in the turn of the century. And you go back to Nat Turner's Rebellion way back in 1831, which we're going to look at too. There's a lot of violence that's gone on throughout all of this stuff. That's the next poem to look at, and we'll look at it pretty quickly. It's on the ones from the other day, the first sheet, and those I don't have enough of. It's Remembering Nat Turner. It's beside Gwendolyn Brooks' poem by the... Nat Turner staged what is historically known as the biggest and most violent slave revolt in American history. And some of you were here the very first day that black literature got started at Holden, and not the very first day ever, but the first day this week. And we looked at slave narratives, and we looked at some perspectives from slave owners and said that, well, their slaves are really quite contented, and they're, you know, and all those kinds of generalizations. Nat Turner was not content. Most slaves weren't. And they knew about their right to be freedom, to be free. Well, Sterling Brown in the 1920s and 30s and 40s, he's most popular. Writes this as a tribute to Nat Turner's revolt, okay? And again, I'm setting up this revolt, this modern kind of literature that we'll see now in the third poem. We saw a bloody sunset over Cortland, once Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is where this whole revolt got started, not Jerusalem, Israel. We saw a bloody sunset over Cortland, once Jerusalem, as we followed the trail that old Nat took when he came out of Cross Keys down upon Jerusalem in his angry stab for freedom 100 years ago. The land was quiet and the mist was rising. Out of the woods in the Nottoway swamp over Southampton, the still night fell as we rode down to Cross Keys where the march began. Now the march was passed on by word of mouth, by whisper, by secret, we're going to revolt, we're going to revolt. And in 1831, the revolt takes place. In 64, women and men are butchered. It's an awful thing. And it's looked at and said, look at the slaves, they're animals. It dumps all kinds of stereotypical, you know, proof, so say the slave owners. Well, look at them, no wonder what happens to them when they get a chance. As opposed to his angry stab for freedom. I won't stop much more. When we got to Cross Keys, they could tell us little of him. The Negroes had only the faintest recollections. I ain't been here so long. I come from up round Newsome. Yes, a town a few miles up the road. The old folks who could have told you is all dead and gone. I heard something sometime. I don't just remember what. Appears like I heard that name somewheres or other. So he fought to be free. Well, you don't say. An old white woman recalled exactly how Nat crept down the steps, axe in his hand, after murdering a woman and child in bed. Right here in this here house at the head of these stairs, in a house built long after Nat was dead. Every time I read this, Jeannie and I, that's my wife right there, hi. She walks in and says, is this going to be any good? I kicked her out, but she didn't need it. We had the good fortune to be in Jerusalem, in Israel in 1974, and one of the astonishing things to us was how many people told us, right here, this is the spot where the Good Samaritan, you know, picked up the guy that was in the ditch, and that's a story, right? And they had all kinds of, this is the spot where, and there were four, Christ was crucified a lot of times, let me tell you. You know, it was here, it was all over. Well, it's myth added to truth, and how myth changes. I don't mean myth in the best sense of literary criticism. I mean myth is in terms of untruths. Okay. In a house built long after Nat was dead, she pointed to a brick store where Nat was captured. Nat was taken in a swamp 3 miles away. With his men around him shooting from the windows, she was thinking of Harper's Ferry and old John Brown. She cackled as she told how they riddled Nat with bullets. Nat was tried and hanged at Cortland 10 miles away. She wanted to know why folks would come miles just to ask about an old nigger fool. What's the feeling you get so far? I mean, there's no right answer to that. Just in your guts, what's the feeling you get?
She wants to be a part of this. She wants to pretend that she knows more than she does.
Yeah, good. You get the feeling. That's a very good answer. You get, yeah, I know all about that. And she knows nothing about that. Anything else?
This last line about the blacks who say, so he fought to be free. Well, you don't say. That's fascinating.
Yes, that's terrific to bring it up. So he fought, well, you don't say.
Well, and in that contrast with the Negroes who have no recollection at all.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody around here knows anything about
that. Know everything even though it's wrong.
I also had the good fortune to be in South Africa last summer, and I asked the woman that picked me up at the airport if she'd ever read Cry Freedom. Oh, goodness, no, she said. Can't get a hold of that here. And the censorship and the oppression of truth, as I've understood black literature, a lot of that has been oppressed too. Let's just keep these things away. That's stretching it perhaps, maybe not. The blacks don't know this story because he fought for freedom. Well, you don't say. Got any ideas here? I mean, again, I'm trying to set up what's happening, what's going to happen in the 60s with poetry. This is 1940.
Probably
knows,
but better left not unsaid.
Yeah. Well, and that might be too, yeah. Yeah, he fought for freedom, huh? Like a lot of slaves. How's your slave master? Is he a good guy? Oh, yeah, he's a great guy. Inside. He fought for, I don't know this. Okay, very good. Okay, we've got, you're into what poetry's supposed to do. First off, hits you in the guts. Second off, your mind will whirl, and it whirls later and later. That's good. But the first place to hit you is in your guts, your emotion, your heart, and then it moves to your soul, and then your intellect and emotions and spirit all get mixed up, and then poetry is really working. She wanted to know why folks would come miles just to ask about an old nigger fool. Ain't no slavery no more. Things is going all right. Provided there's a good goober market this year. Peanuts. Provided there's a good goober market this year. We had a signpost here with printing on it, but it rotted in the hole, and there it lies, and the nigger tenant split the marker for kindling. Things is all right now. Ain't no trouble with the niggers. Why they make this big to-do over that? You get it, don't you? As we drove from Cross Keys back to Cortland, along the way that Nat came down upon Jerusalem, a watery moon was high in the cloud-filled heavens, the same moon he dreaded 100 years ago. Nat's not too eager to do this. I don't want to kill. Read the confessions of Nat Turner. I don't want to kill these people. But I want freedom more than anything. The same moon he dreaded 100 years ago. The tree they hanged Nat on is long gone to ashes. The trees he dodged behind have rotted in the swamps. The bus for Miami and the trucks boomed by. The touring cars, their heavy tires snarling on the pavement. Frogs piped in the marshes and a hound bayed long. And yellow lights glowed from the cabin windows. As we came back the way that Nat led his army, down from Cross Keys, down to Jerusalem, we wondered if his troubled spirit still roamed the Nottoway, or if it fled with a cock crow at daylight, or lay at peace with the bones in Jerusalem, its restlessness stifled by Southampton clay. We remembered the poster rotted through and falling, the marker split for kindling a kitchen fire. Your guts? Nothing special. Not analysis. Your guts? We came back the way that Nat led his army, down from Cross Keys. Up above, the bus from Miami and the trucks boom by, touring cars, heavy tires, frogs piped in the marshes. What's going on?
Life is going on.
Life's going on. Not much has changed. But, oh, what's lying underneath? Way back then, there weren't cars, and there weren't... But that way back then, there were frogs piping in the marshes, and hounds might have bayed long, and there might have been yellow lights in the window, and it's all quiet, isn't it? And in meanwhile, Nat Turner's going for freedom. As we came back that way that Nat led his army, we wondered if his troubled spirit still roamed the Nottoway. I love this line, Christians all, huh? Or if it fled with the cock crow at daylight. What's that?
Referring to the
denial. The denial. If it fled with the... And even if you don't know that, my contention about poetry is, yours too, I'm sure, is that somehow those images just kind of bop on you. How's that for a word? They just kind of go into you, and you feel it, and you don't even know why, but something there troubles me. And the cock crow is part of that. Whether you analyze it and point it out or figure it out or anything, it's still part of what... This is troubling. This is a poem about, or that somehow alludes to, denial and freedom. And not only denial of Christ, but listen to this. Remember this one? Ain't no slavery no more. Things is going all right, provided there's a good goober market this year. And you know what happened in 1964, and 63, and 62, and 61, and in the whole civil rights, you know, violence. Okay. Anybody have anything they want to throw out, add to this? Isn't that a neat poem? Or am I crazy?
Yeah.
Or it could be both. It could be a neat poem and I could be crazy. Jeannie, you keep quiet. Okay. Now we're going to look on the new page, right across from the first poem I read here, If We Must Die, to Imamu Amiri Baraka, that's his new name. He was, at one time when he first started publishing, Leroy Jones, and some of you might know him for that name. He won the Obie, which is the Off-Broadway Award, for the best play of 1961 called The Dutchman. And I want to just, for whatever it's worth, Leroy Jones is clearly one of, if not the, one of the leading American intellectuals of the day. His analysis into society, his literary analysis, his scholarship on slave narratives and slave songs and on music. I mean, his scope is incredible. His depth is unbelievable. He's a very, very good scholar. No big deal, except this is an interesting poem to come from a scholar. And if the words are rough, let them happen. Now, I'm going to stop with this poem about 12 lines to the end. I don't want you to read ahead. because that'll spoil part of all that's going on here. Okay. So when I stop, you stop. If I was going to do this in an adult education session for church or something, I'd go close the door. I was going to go close the door, but it's taped. They mean they really said that in that session? Okay, here we go.
Who's that guy?
This is radical stuff, folks. This is 1960s. Poems are bullshit unless they are teeth or trees or lemons piled on a step or black ladies dying of men leaving nickel hearts beating them down. Fuck poems, and they're useful. But they should come at you, love what you are, breathe like wrestlers, or shudder strangely after pissing. We want live words of the hip world, live flesh and coursing blood, hearts, brains, souls, splintering fire. What's happened to you? Be honest. I know what my mother would say. So go ahead and say it.
Stop reading.
Don't read that trash, Paul. What did they teach you at Luther? Believe me, folks, it wasn't Luther. We want poems like fists beating niggers out of jocks. What's that? Just not what does it mean? I'm not asking that. What does it make you think of? What's a jock? I mean, you know what jock is, a supporter, but what's a jock in the vernacular of American
society?
A
sports.
Yeah, a sports.
Athlete.
Athlete. Yeah, the athlete, right. And we want poems like fists beating niggers out of jocks. Lots of blacks, especially the avant-garde intellectuals, are going to get into, because you guys are selling your soul to the American material way. Get your $3 million a year and be a, as you heard the poetry a couple days ago, be a nigger, which, and that awful word is used by black writers to suggest the sellout. Okay? The Uncle Tom, the someone that's bought into the system and bought its values, and it's screwed up its values that are, and my favorite, I got a lot of favorite lines from Jesus, but one of my favorite is, it's values of this world, and Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. And you just begin to get a little hint that this awful language is true to the gospel. My kingdom is not of this world. That, like fists beating niggers out of jocks, or dagger poems in the slimy bellies of the owner Jews. Black poems to smear on girdle mama mulatto bitches whose brains are red jelly stuck between Elizabeth Taylor's toes. Stinking whores. We want poems that kill. Remember that poem, right? Change, change, change. Kill. Right across the page. Now flip it over just for a second. Nigger, can you kill? Can you kill? Can a nigger kill? Can a nigger kill a honky? And it goes on. And then at the very bottom. Can we learn to kill white for black? Learn to kill niggers. Killing is not a poem. It is. On one level only. She's too smart for this. It's not just a violent statement that's, we're going to kill everybody. It's kill the mind that is in you. Gospel language is kill the kingdom. For my kingdom is not of this world. And that's the radical statement to turn from all of those values, all of those constructs that say, what are the values? It's not just materialism. It's the value that says, if you got long blonde hair, you're pretty. Anybody read Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings? Or heard of it?
Yeah.
What's the... It's worth everybody here. You remember how it opens in her dream? This black girl has a dream that opens this book. Why should you remember? But this is a test. Her dream has... And she's had it several times, she says, in the beginning of this autobiography. I dreamed I'd wake up and I'd have long blonde hair and blue eyes and not a space between my teeth big enough for a number two pencil. Because beauty... has been just, my kingdom is this world, and we've got beauty all set up for it, right? And we can all, that's why there's anorexia, and that's why there's black people who in the 1920s and 30s, and look in any magazine, what's it called? Ebony, yeah. And then you look in the 20s and the 30s, and you see ads for skin whitener. You see ads for hair straightener. And then you see the 60s, no straightener, let's have what? The afro. This kingdom is going to get killed. Films, right, from a couple months ago, or a month or so ago, whenever that was. That's what he means. Poems that wrestle cops into alleys and take their weapons, leaving them dead, with tongues pulled out and sent to Ireland. knockoff poems for dope-selling wops or slick half-white politicians, airplane poems. Now, anybody here an English major in college? What would your English teacher in literary criticism say if you, I got a poem, here it is. You know, you're out of here. F for you. If I'd have read that when I was a Lutheran, I wouldn't even have graduated. Okay. Setting fire and death to Whitey's ass. Look at that liberal. Look at the liberal. Those of you who heard about just last night, help me out. Martin Luther King. The moderate, well, another word for that is the liberal. The extremist, the radical on one side, the moderate, the liberal. I put them on the other end of the pole. Some people might go like this. The radical or the extremist, the liberal, the moderate, and then on this end is the redneck. I put the redneck in the middle. I think most blacks would. They know where he or she stands. It's the liberal and the moderate that sets people back more because they accept the kingdom as it is. And anybody that walks in here and writes KKK on the wall, we're going to throw him out in his ear, right? We are, right? You can't do that. Anybody that walks in here and says something about, yeah, I know it's controversial, says something about affirmative action, we'll get into a great debate. We'll form a committee, we'll study it, we'll, all the things that, yeah, okay. Look at the liberal spokesman for the Jews, clutch his throat and puke himself into eternity. There's a Negro leader pinned to a bar stool in Sardis, eyeballs melting in hot flame. Another Negro leader on the steps of the White House, one kneeling between the sheriff's thighs, negotiating coolly for his people. Ah! Stumbles across the room. Put it on him, poem. Strip him naked to the world. Another bad poem, cracking steel knuckles in a Jew lady's mouth. Stop. Don't read ahead. What's happened to you? Are you offended? It's okay to be. I know my mom, again, I might, phew. I haven't gone home. I'm going to do that. We're going home right after this. Mom, I got a poem to read to you. Where are you eating supper tonight? How do you feel?
I feel really tense just hearing all that.
Yeah, for sure. That's what a great response. That's the guts talking. How else do you feel? Tense?
Fury.
And poetry is about experience. All of it is. But if we stop there, we fail so weakly with what poetry is. Poetry is about experience. But it is also experience. And if you felt tense, that's not about an experience. That's your experience. Fury is your experience. Disgust. This guy is, Amiri Baraka is not out there to sensationalize the words of the world like some 12-year-old kid is and say, listen to all the bad words I can say. Right? He's too smart for that. Why put that junk in there? We're going to just shake you to the bones about poetry. And we're going to shake you to the bones about your values. Elizabeth Taylor's toes. Who's beautiful? I mean, in Liz Taylor's the idol. I mean, one of many, right? And here's another poem where you have Liz Taylor in your eyeballs so much that you can't even see Richard Burton sitting next to you. It's about, you get it, it's about the values and all. Okay. What else do you feel? I heard.
Sure. You know, when he talks about airplane poems and the time we get to the next, I start feeling this rage, hearing this rage.
Yeah.
It's that there aren't words for anymore.
What a statement. You, literary critic, all of you are. There aren't any words for it anymore.
You find yourself getting mad too?
Yeah. And even if you're mad at this guy, here's my mom. What's he writing that trash? Good, he's going to say as a poet. I want you angry. I want you to just look at all this stuff. Why, I want to read John Keats. You know, I'll admit that. Keats is pretty proper. Mom won't kick him off. She won't understand him. Who does? Okay, keep going. Anything else?
I think there's a sadness about the whole thing.
What? Yeah, what's sad? Why? I mean,
just because of what he has to say and what really is kind of happening out there.
Yeah.
He sees it happening.
Yep. There's sadness, and we all somehow, there's anger, and there's tenseness, and there's sadness. Oh, it's come to this.
Well, it's like the grief that's related to trauma.
Yeah, that's a nice phrase, too.
I find myself wondering, why is he so down on the Jewish people here when they are more liberal and advocate for the blacks?
Yeah.
Are they the tenant landlord, too?
Yes. And they're, you said the phrase, right, they are more liberal, but what all these black poets in the 60s are after are not people who are liberal. We've got to, I mean, who accept the status quo, and we'll work through this, but people who are radical. We've been working on the liberal movement since slavery first began. You know, let's talk. Let's see if we can get a law. Can you buy me free, master? You know, I mean, there's lots of stories about that. So that's a good way to put it. They are liberal, and they're more liberal. I think
the average person in the ghetto felt they were really exploited by Jewish merchants.
Yep. That's a good point, too. And you've had that experience. I'm just working there for many years. Anything else? Yeah.
I'm just feeling a growing apprehension. I'm waiting for the sword to pierce me. I have a feeling there's something waiting for me at the end of this poem.
Oh, I love you for saying that. Can we talk? Or did we talk?
And it better be really good because the rest is really led up to it.
This session is over. I'm sorry. How many people are going home tomorrow? How many people are going home the next day? Okay, it will continue 2 days from now when you're all gone.
Paul, one word that comes to my mind is a sense of frustration.
Yeah.
Because the feelings are there, but not much is happening. And it takes a long time to make it happen.
Yeah. What a great answer, too, because you listen to all the things, you think, well, okay, there's one filthy line. Oh, no, there's a filthy, I mean, we're talking oral sex anyway, all kinds. There's another filthy line. Let's get this out of here. And you're frustrated with that. What's going to happen? I wrote it up here. You guys said it. The sword. I come not to bring peace, but to bring a sword. Here's Leroy Jones and Mary Baraka's sword. Now we can read on. Poem, screen, poison gas on beasts and green berets, and it's done. And then clean out the world for virtue and love. Let there be no love poems written until love can exist freely and cleanly. Let black people understand that they are the lovers and the sons of lovers and warriors and sons of warriors, our poems and poets and all the loveliness here in the world. Loveliness, when I was a little kid, that was a feminine kind of word. Well, I mean, there's no such thing, and I know that now. As a kid, I wouldn't walk around and say, oh, it's just lovely. I mean, you're a guy, you don't do that. He knows the power of that word and all this, you know, kind of the semantic connotation history that's associated with it. Again, that's why I told you, you know, he's a bright guy. Our poems and poets and all the loveliness here in the world. Vernon, our village pastor, told me, you know, I was in college. I didn't know we had black poets. My response to him was, you were victim of the same racist education that I was, and that all of you are too. We didn't know that stuff. And if you don't remember my telling you, I'll tell you again. I had finished, except for one class, I had finished my master's degree in American literature, and I hadn't read one black author. That's a racist education. And I didn't choose that. The system just said, here's what you read. Read this, this, and this, and okay, I will. Now I'm educated, right? Yeah, go out and teach. Okay. I didn't know. So no wonder now Baraka says, black people understand that they are the lovers. I mean, this is black power, this is black beauty, and black power now isn't just, you know, burn down the street and let's fight with guns. Black power is understand that they are the lovers and the sons of lovers and warriors and sons of warriors, our poems and poets and all the loveliness here in the world. We want a black poem and a black world. Let the world be a black poem, and let all black people speak this poem silently or loud. That's the sword. Out of all that stuff, am I crazy? Is it true to the gospel? The kingdom, my kingdom, is not of this world. Richard Wright, that great novelist who, you know, Native Son, you might have heard of it, Black Boy, said, if it weren't for black people, America would never even question democracy. You'd watch your freedoms just slip away. But we don't have them, so we keep questioning. That's why we want a black poem. He's not trying to say, and I say this now, you have to just trust me, in the context of all his poetry, that blacks are superior, and that black, except there's a vision about freedom that whites don't have. There's a question raised that whites aren't making. And there we have it. Now your responses. Related to some of this stuff, if you want, but whatever you have.
Getting back to grief, it makes me think of the getting through the process of grief, which sounds trivial, but really isn't. It's a terribly difficult, long process. And finally, getting to the point where we can begin to build our lives.
Yeah. That's a nice statement that fits Remembering Nat Turner. They aren't going to begin. Well, there's no slavery around here. As long as we have a good peanut crop, everything's fine. Oh, cut it out. And that's what the guy said. Remember, I read that, if you were here, but if not, I'll just remind you. That's what the slave owners said when the people. One guy wrote a book and he evaluated slavery. And said, they're fine. They're content. They're happy. They don't even act like they know there should be anything but subservient. Baloney. That's as dumb as the woman saying, we have no slavery here, it's fine, as long as we have a good peanut crop.
There were Negroes like that, though, weren't there?
Some.
They weren't all ready to fight.
For sure. For sure. And that's part of the awareness of freedom.
I didn't say it was
the,
good, I don't mean
right.
that.
You know, I understand you, and you're right. Lots of them, you know, were...
They had the courage.
And the phrase came from that, from Uncle Tom's, the book, Uncle Tom's Cabin. The phrase comes, those people, you know, by the black moderns, are called Uncle Tom's.
House niggers.
House niggers, settle for what you got. Take what you get, and yeah, that's an accurate observation. Anything else?
This poem seems to be a poem for whites, blacks, or red people who have suffered.
Yeah.
And who are suffering poverty in the United States or anywhere.
Yep. Thanks for saying that, because black poetry is not for blacks. And if it spoke only to blacks, it couldn't be, I'm not saying this is a great poem, I think it's a good one, but it couldn't be great if it just speaks to a certain segment. It's got to speak to all of us, to our hearts about, and what does it speak about? What are those big generalizations? Freedom, love, the values that the society sets up that we all buy into.
The black poem at the end, let the world be a black poem, to me, this symbolizes let the world be filled with self-esteem.
Yeah, that's great.
People.
Yep, it is. Let the world be full of self-esteem. Let the world be full of love. I mean, you are a black poet, a poem. Sons of a lovers and sons of warriors and be proud, and yeah, it is. Well, here's another one that's a little lighter, more fun, but a powerful message. It's on right kitty corner down on the same page. This is by, I can never remember his new name, Haki Madhubuti. But he was Don L. Lee when this was published. And he is a teacher at the University of Chicago, still is. Also really one of the leading intellectuals, I think, of black criticism. And note that Don L. Lee and Leroy Jones changed their name. Why do a lot of black people change their name? I'm sure some of you know that, and maybe some don't. Cassius Clay became Muhammad Ali, famous. Who the big center. Lew Alcindor became
Kareem
Abdul-Jabbar. Why do they do that?
Is it to reject the Christianized part
yep.
of it? It's
which,
Muslim, isn't it?
The Christianized, well, some of them take, yeah, a lot of them take on Muslim names, yes. And that's right. The Christianized name, which is a slave name. My name is Olson. I own slaves. Who are they? Their name is Olson. There aren't very many, because there weren't so many, as you pointed out the other day, there aren't so many Norwegians and Swedes down there in the South who own slaves. But Jacksons and Williams, what kind of names are black, you know, well, those are...
Jefferson.
Yeah, Jefferson, right. Jefferson had his share of slaves, good.
William.
Okay, so he's changed his name, I'm getting rid of that, I'm going to, you know, it's either African name or Muslim, good. I've heard Lee read this, so I'm going to read it as he does, not as well as he does, but... this is a stage poem, and it's pretty hot and wild, so have fun with it. Super cool! Ultra black-a-tan purple had a beautiful shade. He had a double natural that would put the sisters to shame. His dashikis were tailored. Now, this guy is really into Africa stuff, right? He's got the big Afro hair, and he's got real black skin, and he's, okay. His dashikis were tailor-made, and his beads were imported seashells from some black country I never heard of. He was triple hip. His tikis were hand-carved out of ivory and came express from the motherland. He would greet you in Swahili, say goodbye in Yoruba. Woo, Jim, he'd be so cool and intelligent. Cool Cool is so cool, he was uncool, but other niggers cool. Cool Cool, ultra cool, was bot cool, icebox cool, so cool, cold cool. His wine didn't have to be cool, him was air-conditioned cool. Cool Cool, real cool, made me cool, now ain't that cool. Cool Cool, so cool, him nicknamed refrigerator. Cool Cool, cool. I heard him read it differently right here, and I'm going to do it the way he did. Cool Cool, super cool, real cool. He didn't know. After Detroit, Newark, Chicago, Watts, etc., we had to him. Cool Cool, super cool, real cool. And to be black is to be very hot. Wonderful, isn't it? I mean, how come? Me, it isn't wonderful. I shouldn't say that for you. What's it about? Again, my kingdom is not of this world. Okay, you're cool, man. You got all the African stuff, and you've just slipped out of one kind of bought identity into another. And all you've done is walk down the streets being cool. Man, I'm cool. Anybody read that wonderful poem by Gwendolyn Brooks? We cool, we real cool, we shoot pool, we skip school. And she's just making fun of those cool cats that skip education. That skip knowing that they're sons of lovers and sons of warriors. And yeah, I wish I, now that I say that, I wish I had the poem on here, but I don't.
The scripture that I spew the lukewarm out of my mouth.
The what?
I spew the lukewarm out of my mouth.
From?
In the
Revelation.
The Bible.
Oh, in
the
Revelation 3. United.
That's why we asked you to come here, because... Yeah, very good. Thank you. Yeah. The lukewarm is gone. And you and the lukewarm is the, for Martin Luther, it's the moderate. Here it's the liberal.
Was he, when he referred to the nickname refrigerator, was he referring to the football players?
No. And it's almost too, that's a great question, because it's almost too bad that the refrigerator, but the refrigerator is much later than this guy is.
Much cooler.
And, yeah, it's much cooler, that's right. Anybody else?
Can I make a comment? I'm from Dallas, and we're having quite a political infight, if you will, right now. The blacks there are pressing for more seats in the city council, more smaller districts where they can afford to get elected or get elected and have more representation, more equal to their population. There are now two blacks on the council, and they are currently wearing their, I'm not sure the names of these things, but all the garb that are mentioned in this poem. When there's a televised bid on TV, it's always where they're really aroused, and they're very definitely activists. And yet, on the other side of the coin, there's a black moderate group coming into play. They are the middle class black. They are more conservative. The Powell of the Supreme Court justice would fit their mold, I think. And so they're coming into play, and they're becoming tension between those two groups right now.
Right, because they don't want their pleasant, comfortable position to be shaken out. And
but the activists also don't want the conservative blank in a position of authority or where they can have a voice, a public forum. The activists are doing everything they can to maintain the public forum for themselves. And so there is a tension going on there. And maybe I'm misjudging it, and some of these others from Dallas can say the same thing, but they're definitely against the white establishment. That's right.
Yep.
But there's two different ways of getting there going on, and it's quite interesting. It'd be interesting to see some poetry, because I think you'd see two sides being represented.
You are absolutely right, and that's what this first poem we read, Baraka's Black Art, is about when he says, this whole representation of as a Negro leader pinned to a bar stool, another Negro leader on the steps of the White House, another one between the sheriff's thighs. There are people who are You know, there's a different side to this. And somebody said, yeah, you said it, that nobody wants the kingdom destroyed. And if the blacks participating in the kingdom the way it is, don't mess it up for me.
But there's some real power struggle going on how to go about this.
You know, it's really obvious in South Africa, between, you know, the whites over in South Africa say, well, look at them, they're fighting among themselves all the time. And it's just coming out now. Just now, everybody suspected it for years, that the government is supplying money and arms to the Nkafa tribes to keep going against the ANC, because the Nkafas have been against forming unions, because some of them got their homelands, and that's a whole, it's a real complex area, but it's the moderate people that the government supports, because they're not about to make such a radical change as the ANC proposes, which is one man, one vote, one woman, one vote, which is the socialization of some industries. You know, oh, socialization, my gosh, that's got it. You know, all kinds of, so divide, your example is good. And
divide and conquer.
Yeah, right.
The people in power are delighted about this and support it.
Yep, yep.
Right. Just to add one kind of interesting historical footnote to that is that Nkatha, Buthelezi, Zulus are all defined black Lutherans of South Africa.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Buthelezi's nephew is Manas Buthelezi, who is the Lutheran bishop.
Well, I thought just the Swedes and Norwegians that got into that liberal, I mean, into that moderate state. Let's not go too fast here. Yeah. Anybody else? Let's see, let me look at my... Okay, the last thing, we've only got 4 minutes. I won't do another poem. I'll ask you, true to the gospel, how do you make the connection with some of the things that you, that I wrote for you, that you said before, and now this pretty, in one sense, violent, for sure, radical look at our society, at our kingdom? How do you connect them?
I see here what got Jesus crucified, though.
Yeah.
Going against the status quo.
Yep. That's great. This is what got Jesus crucified. And you can go through a whole list of people who have fought against the system, and it got them one way or another crucified too. Anybody else? The way it does it for me, for whatever that's worth, is that Jesus is so radical. Love your enemies. Love, I mean, I'm even more important than those ties to family. They're good, and there's lots of, and I'm sure lots of theologians that have explained that far better than I can. I'm just thinking, it's so radical. And love is so radical. And it's the love, love as I have loved you. It's radical even onto the cross. And this is pretty radical. And love, all the truths shaking us. And that's why it's done so violently, and I think so, for some, offensively. But so, with the kind of language that's in that first part of the poem. Shake! And then, love.
Well, I was going to say that you have to go to an awful lot of churches before you find any measure of that kind of radicalness. I was in Shreveport, Louisiana, visiting some friends in April. The Episcopal Bishop of Western Louisiana was speaking, and he was really railing against the National Episcopal Church because their big things were homelessness and race relations, things that had nothing to do with the people there in Louisiana.
That's
so
good.
He said. And his big sermon was, Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? But he never, ever referred to the second part, feed my sheep.
You know what the institution with the most support for slavery was in the 17th and 18th, or 18th and 19th century?
The church.
Church. What's the biggest, the most important institution next to law supporting apartheid in South Africa?
The church.
The church. The church has taken moderate stands historically for a long, long time. And it was the church that Jesus spoke against, really, wasn't it? I mean, he had his trouble with the church. Wow, you guys are wonderful. You are all great literary critics. Hey, I got 2 minutes. Let me give you a line to remember. You don't have to stand. You can just stand right here. This is a wonderful line about literary criticism and about what you've just done. I wish I had said it, but I didn't. As a teacher of mine at the University of Oregon said, literary criticism or literary analysis, literary criticism is the art of becoming conscious, is consciousness after experience. You have an experience, here's the poem. And then you become conscious of all that's going on there. And you do that every day in your own life. You have the experiences, then you sit down, now what happened to me just there? You just did that brilliantly. Hey, everybody. See ya.